The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
Right now, though, it gives me a great pleasure to welcome to the show Helen McEntee. She is the Minister for Justice. Minister, you're very welcome.
Good evening, Karen, I mentioned
Anna Marie McHugh, and I mentioned Thomas Cox, CEO and the owner of this hotel, it happens, Pat McDonough. And he told us he's worried about what is in store for this winter. Take a listen.
I would be concerned, though, in one sense, that there could be a little bit of a scarcity of food towards the end of the winter, up towards the December, etc., because just the way things are with the war in Ukraine, etc., it has a massive knock-on effect right across the whole world, really.
Yeah, that was Pat McDonough speaking to us a little bit earlier. He went on to say that he thinks people should stock up on food, on long-life food, on tinned goods, for example. Is that good advice, Minister?
Well, look, I don't disagree with Pat in that. I think the war in Ukraine has certainly impacted on certain food supply chains, in particular when we look at grain and the significant amount that comes directly from Ukraine. This is not a discussion that we've been having at government in terms of potential food shortages in Ireland, and it's not a potential problem that has been brought to my attention. So, you know, I'm not sure that that's the advice that I would be giving to people. I think we need to make sure, yes, that we plan for the future. I think we need to make sure that we, you know, we are very conscious of what is happening on a global stage. But I don't think we're at the stage that we, you know, that we should be encouraging people or telling people to stock up on particular types of food. But I do think, obviously, the significant impact that the war in Ukraine is having more globally on food supply, that is something that we have to be very conscious of, and we have to make sure that we play our part and that we contribute, and that obviously the fact that we export a significant amount of our food, we have a role here to play in making sure that other countries and other people who are less fortunate than us, that we can support them and help them.
Is the more real danger then, from an Irish point of view, when it comes to food, not food shortages, but just a much more serious food price inflation come to winter? Obviously, people have noticed their shopping baskets getting a little bit more expensive, but nothing along the lines of energy price inflation. If food matches that, it would get very serious for some, wouldn't it?
Well, look, I think we're all very conscious of the situation we find ourselves in now. And as you've said, in particular energy, in particular the cost of certain types of material, people who are building and so on. You know, we don't want to see this impacting on other types of materials, in particular food. So every effort will be made at a government level to support people in whatever way that we can. But, you know, again, I don't envisage that we'll have food shortages. We need to make sure that, you know, we're conscious of what's happening on a global stage, but at all stages that we can play our part in making sure that we support people outside of Ireland.
Okay, can I ask then about your own bailiwick, Minister, and the changes to consent laws in Ireland? What is happening?
Well, look, what I've brought forward today and what I've received approval from government is to make a number of changes to the sexual offences legislation. At the moment, in terms of consent, and what I want to do is strengthen and clarify consent and how it's used in rape trials and sexual offences trials. At the moment, there is an honest belief test, so a subjective test, which means that a person who is accused of rape or sexual assault, but rape in particular, whether it's a man or a woman, that they can say they honestly believed that the person was consenting. They don't have to go any further and show that they took any necessary steps, that a reasonable person would then believe that a person was consenting. What I'm proposing and what has been asked for and advocated for by many of the representative groups and victims and survivors is that we introduce what is called an objective test. So this means if a person has been accused, if they put forward a defence, they must show that they took reasonable steps that would, you know, that would make a reasonable person believe that the other person was consenting. So, for example, that they spoke to the other person, that they engaged in a conversation, that they asked if the person was consenting, that they knew that the person was in a position to consent, so that they weren't so, you know, that, you know, if a person was themselves intoxicated or drunk, that is never an excuse around consent. So there are a number of different steps that a person would have to now take and show that they went and took the measures to make sure that that person was consenting. And I think it's really important that we move away from this idea that a person can simply say, well, I honestly believe that the person was consenting, but to a reasonable person, this person couldn't talk, was maybe not able to walk, might have had something happen to them, or they very clearly did not consent and said that they did not consent.
So this, it's fair to say then, this will just place an onus on both parties to any sexual act to have that conversation.
Well, this is part of a wider discussion that we are now having. And as you'll know, I published the Zero Tolerance Strategy just at the end of June. And there is a particular emphasis on education, on consent, healthy relationships, what consent is, what a healthy relationship is, what a healthy sexual relationship is, where there is not consent. And these are all discussions that I believe, and I think a lot of people believe, we should be having with people at a much younger age. I very much welcome the fact that my colleague Norma Foley last week opened the consultation with parents, with teachers, with schools around the new junior cycle and the reform there as to what we should be and how we should be discussing with younger people the issue of, as I've said, consent, relationships, healthy relationships, pornography, all of these issues that impact on how people view relationships and how they engage with each other and what they think is appropriate and what is not. There should never, ever be a situation where someone is in doubt as to whether or not the other person is consenting. You should always, always be in a position where that person is able to consent or where they are freely consenting. Otherwise, you know, this is where sometimes the ambiguity comes into it. So I think this is an important change. It's not a change that we're going to make on its own. There are a number of other amendments I've put forward today and that have been accepted. One is that we will make absolutely clear in law that being drunk is never a defence for rape. So it's not really something that's used, but it's not something that's clearly defined in our law. So a person who is accused can never say, well, I was drunk, I didn't understand, I didn't know the other person didn't consent because I was drunk. So we're making that very clear, black and white. As well as that, we are extending anonymity to victims and indeed to accused to sexual offences cases. So at the moment it applies in rape cases. However, it doesn't apply in sexual offences cases. And what I want is for more people to come forward, more victims to feel comfortable in coming forward. And at the moment that is, I would say, a deterrent. They know that the public can walk into the gallery, they can sit, they can see what's happening and their names can be put out there. We're removing that, but also allowing the media to, in a way that they can, obviously sensitively, that they can report on it. It also means that if somebody is falsely accused and if they are found not guilty, then, you know, some people's lives have been ruined where their names have been put out there. So we have to look at that side as well.
Well, I suppose what we're talking about as well is a change of behaviour as well, isn't it? Because I'm sure there'll be people listening to this and they'll never have been involved in anything untoward, yet they maybe can't remember having kind of a formal conversation, if we'll describe it that way. I want to put this as kind of delicately as possible without wanting it to sound dismissive, but you know, their experience will maybe be kind of the knife kind of flows in a certain direction and both parties go with the flow. Does that make sense? Do you know where I'm coming from? That's their experience, and this is kind of new territory for them, the idea that actually, listen, you've got to stop, that is the world we live in now, you've got to stop and you've got to have a conversation in some shape or form.
Well, look, as with any case, there will be evidence and there will have to be evidence to show that a person went to reasonable lengths and that a reasonable person looking at this from the outside in would say, well, yes, I think it is right to say that that person could reasonably have believed that there was consent. So, you know, again, if it's very clear that a person was not in a position to consent, you know, a person honestly believing just because they had that belief should not be a strong enough defence.
Could you pass an objective test without having any verbal consent?
Well, again, that's something that the jury would have to decide what the circumstances were leading up to this. You know, were there any conversations, what happened beforehand, what happened during? And obviously, it is for a jury to decide, as is the case in any type of criminal trial, what their verdict will be. And it is a jury of our peers, and we obviously place a huge amount of trust in people. But, you know, they will have to prove beyond reasonable doubt that this is their belief and that obviously an individual went and took the relevant steps, or that, you know, as I said, that it wasn't just their belief, but that they can show that they took the steps that would show that a reasonable person believed that there was, and that there was very clearly consent. So it is raising that bar a little bit. It does mean that for the person who is accused, there is a higher bar to be able to put forward that defence. But I think that's only right. I think that's only necessary. The idea that a person could say, well, I honestly believe that person was consenting, where it's very clear that there was no position or no ability for that person to consent, that should never be the case. That should never be allowed.
All right. Well, listen, as you said, Cabinet given approval to these proposed changes today. Of course, members of that Cabinet, Eamon Ryan, Leo Varadkar, Micheál Martin, Charlie McConnell, locked in discussions about agricultural emissions. Before I let you go, how close are we to white smoke or government collapse, as the case may be?
Well, look, I don't think anybody expects or wants it to get to that situation. I think, as with anything that we need to agree, we need to come together on this. Well, look, I don't think that's any kind of talk that's happening. I'll be very honest. I don't think that we'll have an agreement today. Now, whether that means we'll have one this week or whether it'll be later on into August or September, for me, the most important thing, and I think for all of us, is that we get this right, that we have targets that are realistic, that they are sensible, and that we worked with all sectors. So obviously the focus at the moment is on agriculture, but, you know, we need to make sure that we look at the overall picture here, that it's transport, that it's energy, that it's agriculture, that it's business, that it's enterprise, and that's exactly what we're doing. We're just obviously at the final stages where the engagement is in particularly focused on the agricultural sector. And look, I have to stress this, I mean, we are world renowned for the way in which we produce our food as a green, sustainable food production island, and I think our farmers are best placed to be able to work with us on this. So, you know, we will work with them, we'll work with each other. I have confidence that we will reach an agreement, but we need to get it right, and I think getting it right is better than trying to do things, you know, in a quick manner.
Minister for Justice Helen McEntee, Minister, thanks a million for joining us here on the show. We are coming to you live from the Kaleshin Hotel.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan,
weekdays from 4 on News Talk.